Right now, welcome back to the programme, Steve Barnes, the Hong Kong Visa Geezer.
Hello, Phil.
How are you?
I'm okay.
Jolly good. I want to get cracking with an email, dead easy one.
Okay.
From Mike, it's going to be dead easy for
you.
And I don't think Mike's living in Hong Kong at the moment. He says, can you please ask Steve how often we are required to re-enter Hong Kong to keep the ID card? Simple as it sounds, it needs asking.
Well, of course, we need to ask what kind of ID card we're talking about here. If we're talking about a permanent identity card, which means he's got the right of abode, then as long as he's in Hong Kong on at least one occasion in any 3-year given period, then he will maintain his right of abode. So there's no issues at that point. And even then, conceptually, all he needs to do is to make it one single entry, pass through immigration control, and then he could turn around right away and sort of leave Hong Kong, and then he'd be good for another 3 years again.
Right. So within 3 years, and you can literally do a day trip if you want.
The whole idea is for you to maintain your connection to Hong Kong, so they make it very straightforward for foreign nationals who are permanent residents to maintain their permanent residency. But there's a bigger argument, of course, that says or asks, why do we have two qualities of right of abode? We've got right of abode for foreign nationals that can be lost, and you've got right of abode for effectively Chinese citizens that can't be lost. What's that all about?
All right, then, here's another interesting one. Again, quite simple. British guy accompanying his girlfriend who's transferring here to work for 2 years, what can he do to join her?
Well, he needs a rationale for being in Hong Kong.
He's got one.
Yeah, no, he needs a visa rationale for being in Hong Kong, because you get a visa for the type of thing that's bringing you to Hong Kong in the first place. Now, there's no such thing as that. I want to join my visa in Hong Kong. Excuse me, I want to join my girlfriend in Hong Kong
that's
visa.
That's not the second, Steve. In human terms, that's a fairly kosher reason.
Absolutely. He could, for example, if he can show that he's is in a committed life partnership relationship with this lady, and that they have cohabited previously, he could make an application for a prolonged visitor visa to join her, who's assuming that she's going to be working here and she's in a position to sponsor him.
Right.
But that would be what I call a slippers and pipe visa. Effectively, he would get a 6-month period of stay as a visitor on an extended basis, which would allow him to live together with her, but it wouldn't allow him to work. So
is he allowed to apply for work?
Oh yeah, he can, as a visitor visa holder, it's permitted activity to go out and look for work and for interview for work. It's not permitted activity to take that work up. So in a very practical sense, to answer your question, this prolonged visitor visa could remove the burden of him entering and exiting Hong Kong at all times to try and maintain his status, because he wants to be with his partner.
Right.
So by going to the immigration department and disclosing a whole set of information and documentation and paperwork that reveals the committed life partner nature of their relationship, the immigration department will, in 9 times out of 10, probably 99 times out of 100, grant him the extended limited stay they need so that they can carry on their lives together.
This one does come up a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, it is. So there isn't a visa per se for staying here with your girlfriend who's a resident, but you know, you just work within the existing visa classes to come up with something that's sort of, you know, sensible in all the circumstances.
I tell you what, just looking at your website, Hong Kong Visa Geezer, there's one question that somebody has genuinely sent into you.
Okay.
And it says here, this is interesting, it says, it took me almost 12 months to settle in Hong Kong after my, you know, quality QMAS?
Quality Migrant Admission Scheme, yeah.
Approval.
Yeah.
When does the 7-year clock start ticking for right of abode?
Yeah. Well, effectively, it starts ticking once you can demonstrate to the Immigration Department that you became settled here. So ostensibly, if you have had your QMAS visa in this instance activated, but you haven't gone on to, you know, establish a home or go and join in a business or get a job, say you've just activated your visa and then you've left and you've gone back home to your home country to sort of, you know, get your affairs in order.
Right.
And then subsequently you come back to Hong Kong and you decide, well, your visa is about to expire, so you need to get an extension. To get the first extension, you need to be able to show that you've taken steps towards settling in Hong Kong in pursuit of the original purpose of you getting the visa in the first place.
Mm.
But at the point that 7 years down the road when you make your application for permanent residency, as this question is asking, do you start the clock ticking from the day that you first activated your visa but you didn't actually become settled here, or do you start the clock ticking from the day that you actually became settled in Hong Kong?
Well, how do you know when that is? How long is a piece of string?
It's a question of fact, because at the time that you make your application for the right of abode, you have to show to the immigration department what's gone on in your life for the last 7 years, and they will be able to see from your immigration record that perhaps, you know, whilst your visa was activated on day one, you didn't actually become settled here until, say, day 300. So effectively what you've got to do is start the clock ticking from day 300, not from day one.
Mm. Let me ask you a really pearly question.
Okay.
How does a kid get the right of abode if she wasn't born in Hong Kong, but the parents have the right to land?
Basically, you can, if you've got the right to land only, you can't get the right of abode. That's the bottom line.
I still don't get that, and I know you explained it to me last time, so I'll have to ask you to do it again. Right to land, is that just an old thing?
Okay, the right to land, there are two dynamics in the right to land today. There is the right to land that exists for those typically British nationals who were here before the handover, before we had the basic law enacted and the right of abode was available as a mechanism for foreign nationals to acquire. So you would be in those situations, be couched as a Hong Kong belonger, which was a bit of sort of, you know, legislation from the old colonial days around the world, but if for all practical purposes you're a Hong Kong belonger. If you were a Hong Kong belonger before 1997 and you never went on to get the right of abode for one reason or other, not least because you left Hong Kong and never came back,
right.
The argument is if you have, if you were born entitled to the right to land, if you were born as a Hong Kong belonger, you would be entitled to the right to land today. You wouldn't be entitled to the right of abode. So you'd be able to acquire the right to land, and at that point you would come to Hong Kong unconditionally, and after 7 years of living here continuously, you would then be able to upgrade to the right of abode.
Right.
However, today, if you're a long-stay foreign national and you have the right of abode, but, and this is where it ties back to the earlier question, but you haven't been in Hong Kong for at least one day on any three-year given period, right? Then effectively, you're, by operation of law, you're downgraded to the right to land again. So that you lose the right of abode with all its attendant privileges, but you're not, in a practical sense, in any way compromised as a result of that, because you can still come and live here, you can still work, you can still join in the business, you've got the right to land, there are no conditions appended to your period of stay. You just have to then re-establish your connections over 7 years to be upgraded again to secure the right of abode one more time.
Do they still waste time giving you an interim ID card?
Well, I wouldn't say insurance. Interesting,
right,
I said. Basically, you need to possess an ID card that actually accords or records the immigration status that you possess.
Right.
If you've been downgraded from the right of abode to the right to land, and you don't make an application to the immigration department to change your ID card, practically you're going to carry around an ID card with you that says this person, you know, has the right of abode in Hong Kong, but your immigration record itself actually states that you've only got the right to land.
All right, then. I've got a little liner here from Nigel who says they used to deduct lengthy absences from your 7 years, so you'd have to stay on an extra few months or whatever to qualify. Is this still the case?
The argument is continuous ordinary residence for a period of not less than 7 years, and it's sort of a seven-year window of opportunity.
Yeah.
They will not deduct, for example, if you've been away for 3 or 4 months in the middle of those 7 years, they won't deduct those 3 or 4 months and then tag them on at the end, so you've got 3 or 4 months to make up. You're allowed to have any absences from Hong Kong in that time that are of a merely temporary nature, as evidenced by what you leave behind to return back to at the end of each temporary sojourn abroad. So as long as you're at it, your intention is to depart temporarily, it doesn't matter how long it is that you're away for. And in fact, on the application forms, any periods of time that are less than 6 months don't even have to be expressly disclosed with no explanation or representations to be made as to what you're doing away from Hong Kong in all of that time.
Right. Well, I've just another one here that's interesting to me, and there's somebody did ask you, is there such an animal as a flexible working visa? We've talked about this ages ago. It makes sense. There's almost this notion that you're guilty until proven innocent if you want to work here and you're not a permanent resident.
Well, remember, you know, it's about rationales for being here. And if you're going to come and work for somebody, you need to have a sponsor, you need to have a job offer, you need to pass the approvability test in the context of that job offer, that you do possess special skills, knowledge and experience of value to are not readily available in Hong Kong.
Mm.
And if you are in a position to pass the approvability test in the context of that job offer, you'll get your employment visa. You're allowed to remain in Hong Kong to do that job only.
That's what I mean. You've done that job so brilliantly well that somebody else wants to hire you.
So then the immigration department have a mechanism where you can go back to them and say, I've left my previous employer and now want to take up this new job, this new offer of employment. Will you allow me to change my sponsorship from that employer, the old one, to the new one. Here's what's going on in my life. This is a copy of my contract. This is a copy of the job description. You can see that actually I'm able to pass the approvability test in the context of these new circumstances before us. So in that regard, can you please, you know, let me take up that new employment? The Immigration Department will consider the application, and if they think that you pass the approvability test, you're home and hosed.
Yeah, so normally speaking, they'll probably let you do it.
I would say in the vast majority of cases, unless you're moving from, you know, from one profession to another profession that's completely not aligned and doesn't really make any sense for you to be doing that.
Well, yeah, what about people who are in the restaurant industry, service industry, maybe running a restaurant, managing a restaurant, small joint, maybe bar manager, for instance, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Somebody else wants me to be a bar manager somewhere else.
Yeah, but have you got special skills, knowledge and experience of value to not really available in Hong Kong?
If you've got the visa in the first place, mm-hmm. to run a bar
right.
in Soho,
yeah.
then that means you've kind of crossed the hurdle.
If you want to move to another bar
in Soho.
Someone
else is offering me more money up the road,
yeah.
what do I do?
Nine times out of ten you get approved without any real need to argue stridently that there are special circumstances that dictate
okay.
for you not to be approved in those circumstances.
Is there any stuff going around for younger people who might be doing just that? Not student visas, but you know, the year off types.
Working holiday visa. Yeah, we issue working holiday visas to certain types of nationalities: Australians, New Zealanders, Canadians, Italians, Koreans. There may be one or two others, I can't remember. But effectively what you get is a 12-month limit of stay.
Yeah.
And you're principally allowed to work for the same employer for 3 months at a time. So a single employer for 3 months at a time. Mm-hmm. And that then gives you an opportunity to go and sort of savour what Hong Kong has to offer from an employment perspective. But the purpose is not to grant you working permissions as such. The purpose is to allow you to have an extended stay in Hong Kong as a holidaymaker, able to support yourself by taking on some additional work or some part-time work whilst you're here, so you can have a better experience.
All right then. So I was about to say, how does that get us involved with the tax man? I don't even want to know, because that's way
I'm
too...
I'm not a tax guy, so you need to speak to an accountant about that. Yeah.
Yeah, I just wondered if there's any, you know, apart from that, it seems from what you always paint them as being sort of very amiable. And I must say, people don't tend to moan about the immigration
exactly,
boys too
much. Exactly. I agree. They get the immigration department get a terrible rap, because effectively all that ever comes into light publicly are the cases that get refused.
And yeah, well, you mean, let's be frank, Steve, very often if you're from the Philippines or Indonesia or somewhere like that, now that, why?
Well, they're just doing their job, you know. They've got, the system's set up to accept applications from all comers, and that's exactly what they do. And in the case of every single application, they apply the approvability test and they make a determination whether it should be approved or denied. A percentage get refused, the bulk of them get approved. You know, as I say, it's because it's usually the people that are disgruntled that sort of tend to bring their circumstances to public light, that it sounds as though the Immigration Department are out to deny, when in actual fact, you know, I hate to say nine times out of ten, because the stats are probably a lot greater than that, but the vast majority of cases, people get approved because the Immigration Department made the right decision.
All right, then.
Sometimes they get it wrong, though, Phil. They do get it wrong. Well, I mean, they're not completely, you know, without error on occasion.
You do get complaints of basically sort of racist issues sometimes, but we're not there, so we don't know. Talking to Steve Barnes.
Well, I'll be honest. I can't say that I've ever seen it in 20 years of practice. In all fairness, yeah.
Just a couple of minutes left. If you've got any questions for Steve, morningbrew@rthk.hk. Is there any sort of new, you know, stop press stuff happening that we need to know about?
Yeah, something quite interesting, actually. The Immigration Department have always been a bit sort of, they've kept mum on, historically they've kept mum on the type of people who get approved on the Quality Migrant Admission Scheme program. But there was some information out on the web since I saw you last. It basically tells us now that if you apply for a Quality Migrant Admission Scheme visa, there's only a 27% chance that your application is going to get approved. And of that 27%, that is of all the people that have received their approval since the program was first initiated in 2003, of those 27%, 77% are from the mainland. The balance, well, a further 10%, I should say, are issued to citizens of the US, Canada, and Australia. and then the other 10% goes to every other nationality on the planet. So if you're thinking about making an application for Quality Migrant Admission Scheme visa, you can tell that your chances of approval are very low indeed. The other interesting thing about the information they put out was that they actually set up, there's two or three videos on the web now that they've put out that have interviews with successful applicants. And when I look at these applicants and I think about the types of applicants that we've had approved and the quality of talent that we're talking about for an approval in this this visa program, they are very special. I mean, one guy's a is an art therapist, the other guy's a psychologist, one guy's a professional ice hockey coach, the other one of the lady, I think the detail there was a soprano, another
maybe lady, they're letting singers in,
another lady was a silver medalist for ice skating. Very interesting stuff, you know, very unusual. So the sort of the corporate warriors that have got 20 years of experience in HR, for example, and are thinking that whilst they've got a really good score under the program, they could be in with a chance of an approval. If you actually look at the type of people that get approved, they are standalone, outstanding talents
I've known themselves. That from the start, because they were talking about a very famous Chinese concert pianist.
Yeah, but there are two parts to that. There's the achievements-based test, which is where if you're a Nobel Prize winner, you get 165 points right from the get-go, you're home and hoes. Or your general points admission, a general points test, you're admitted under that program. That's where you can, if you've got a minimum of 18, you get up to a maximum 165, then they look at what your work history has been and what contribution you might be able to make. Under the general points test, that's extremely competitive, and we haven't been able to understand the type of people that are getting approved in any sort of systematic fashion, because I've known investment bankers that have gotten approved under this program.
I'll tell you what
before.
They are, Steve. We're out of time right now. They're the kind of people that CY could put on his mantelpiece. Basically, Steve Barnes is the Hong Kong visa geezer.